Blog Talk Radio.
Woo! What up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk. Oh, man, we got a lot to talk about tonight. Man, we got a lot of stuff going on. We had a good weekend of fights. We got some fights coming up that we want to talk about. Dana White has been doing some things to peeve your boy off here lately. And, you know, I'm not happy about it, but I'm going to talk about that later. But we got a great show for you guys tonight. We can jump into a lot of stuff tonight. You guys just put on your seatbelt, strap in, and let me and Keys take off, because it's going to be a great show tonight. What's up, Keys, man? How goes it, bro?
I just want to say one thing. Shout out to Eastern Cannabis. I've been going to Eastern Cannabis in Massachusetts now. Weed is highly, ironically, it's highly recreational. And at this point, like, it's crazy to think about. Like, 10 years ago, it was, like, you know, felt super weird. Nowadays, like, everybody is smoking out here. So, Eastern Cannabis is phenomenal. Just shout out. That's a good spot out my way. If you're on the East Coast, you happen to hear it, just know when you're in the area, you're in the Boston area, Eastern Cannabis got some good stuff. They got some great deals there. So shout out to Eastern Cannabis. Second, I'm good, bro. I'm chilling. I'm ready to go. We got a couple things on there. I'm looking forward to it. UFC Paris 2. I know you got something to get off. I say you kick it off.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and get this off my chest, man. Your boy Dana White been working with nerves here lately. All right, so Aljamain Sterling lost the belt to Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley called out his shot that he wanted to defend the belt against Chito Vera. Now Dana is mad because Marab says that he thinks Aljamain should get a rematch before he fights for the belt. These guys are teammates. They have the utmost respect for each other. These guys corner each other when they can. Dana White has this double standard when it comes to guys that he like and guys that he don't like. We all know Dana White has a rocky relationship with Aljamain Sterling. We know Dana White has a rocky relationship with John Jones. Guys that he has a rocky relationship with, he seems to basically try to lay the hammer down on them. I bet if Autumn Lobov was still in the UFC, he would never go out of his way to try to make a fight between Conor McGregor and Autumn Lobov. I would go out on a limb. I would bet money he wouldn't try to make that fight. Why is this guy so mad about Marab being loyal to Aljamain Sterling? Them boys are friends. Them guys are training mates. Look, Aljamain Sterling probably is going to go up in weight. I don't think he's going to seek a rematch against Sean O'Malley. I think the weight cut is probably getting to him now. I think the only reason he will probably go after a rematch for O'Malley is so that he can win the belt and then move up so he could get an immediate title shot at 145. That would be the only reason why he would even think about doing a rematch for O'Malley. Keys, man, Dana White has to start with this double standard, bro. It's not a good look, man. It's definitely not a good look.
Basically, it's funny how history basically repeats itself. It's a very, very interesting thing because it's not the same chain of events, but I think there's quite a few parallels, you know what I mean, in this. So when we had the T-Wood fan club, which is now under new ownership of the Aljo fan club, which was already going on. I just hadn't officially named it. Both of those were happening, you know, concurrently, or those were happening at the same time. And I feel like there's a lot of parallels between the way Dana White used to look at Tyron Woodley and the way he looks at Aljamain Sterling now, pretty much the whole time. It's like, you know, I don't doubt that Dana White was mad that he beat Peter Yan in the rematch. I don't doubt that he was mad that TJ Dillashaw couldn't beat him and got smashed in two rounds. You know, I don't – so, and or Cejudo, I'm sure he wasn't happy about, you know, Aljamain outclassing Cejudo for 5 out of 5 rounds like he did, because that was a 5-0. To me, that was a 50-45 fight. I don't think Cejudo won a round. And I'm very confident in saying that. I think that the fight was – the fact that that was even – so what I'm going to get to now is the fact that that fight was is even viewed as a controversial fight, and it I'm pretty sure was a split decision, is just totally – the fact that a judge even had Cejudo winning that fight. Like, if you had Cejudo winning that fight in your scorecard, like, I understand. I'll just say that. I get it. Like, you don't like Aljamain Sterling, you just had Cejudo winning off that. You really didn't – you didn't account for the fight and what really happened and what you really saw. You're just going off the fact that you hated Sterling. That's why you have Cejudo winning that fight, because there's no world where he won that fight. That was not a close fight. So when I go back and I'm, you know, going back and forth with this guy on Facebook, like, last week about it, he's telling me, like, oh, it wasn't a controversial decision. You know, referencing how, you know, he's talking about O'Malley, like, that was kind of a concrete, you know, at the KO, it wasn't a controversial decision. And I get it. Like, you're trying to, you're alluding to how you feel like Aljamain has had controversial decisions. Cejudo, I don't think that should have been controversial. I think the only reason that it wasn't is because they, we know what, y'all wanted it, then they wanted Cejudo as the champion. You know what I mean? Y'all wished that all these guys could have done it. And each time you were upset by the result, so you just go back to saying, like, Aljamain Sterling wasn't a good champion. You know, he always had iffy fights. He didn't win any of those fights. You know, his title defenses aren't not good title defenses. And it's like, you just say that because you didn't like him. You know what I mean? That's why you say that. Like, you know what I mean? The last three fights he had, that's all fair play to me. I don't see any problem. I thought he beat Jan decisively in the rematch, which they said it was extremely close, which it wasn't. If you're the champion, you should not have somebody taking your back and you just basically getting beat up and you can't move on the ground. You are not the champion if you get put in a body triangle and you're getting punched repeatedly because you're a fish out of water on the mat against them. You are not the champion when that happens to you. You are no longer the champion. That's it. That should not happen. You know what I mean? If you're in there and you're the champion, defending champion, reigning defending champion, you should look like you're the reigning defending champion. If you don't look like the champion in your title defense, you lose your belt. That's how that works. In my book, that's how it works. You should look like the champion. If you're the champion, playboy, come on. You know what I'm saying? So none of these guys, you can't – Cejudo looked levels behind in that fight, and y'all just said it was controversial. And now, finally, a guy – see, what y'all had to do was you had to finish Aljamain Sterling in the title fight. You had to beat him by finish because you're not going to beat him over 25 minutes. Like, Sean O'Malley was not going to beat him for 25 minutes, you know? Like, say it wasn't – and this is no cope. This is just really looking at it. If – you know Sean O'Malley would not be better than Aljamain Sterling for 25 minutes. And that's not an easy thing to do when you have a guy like that. But it's Dana White finally got my point. Is he finally got to where he has a guy as champ that UFC as a business wants to promote. You have a guy that you're happy about him being champ. So basically, what we're seeing here is the organization. And Dana White wanting to protect his new champion. That's what we're seeing here. Be real. That's what we're seeing. I mean, to try to X both Aljamain and Merab, the two strongest candidates to take the belt right back off O'Malley in the division. Fact. Sanhagen just started you know doing all this clinch work and becoming a wrestler. You know, he just became. Corey Sanhagen just became Corey Omagomedov. We just saw that. You know what I mean? Corey Omagomedov just started. You know what I mean? He just got there. So, and so, Merab, you know what I mean? 49 takedown attempts versus Peter Yan. 9 trillion strikes, though. How many strikes? He, like, broke a striking record, I'm pretty sure, in the bantamweight division in that fight. Go back and look at the stat sheet. The guy is a machine. against the guy. So what that's what it comes down to me. That's my instinct with that. Dana White finally got a guy that he feels is good, you know, promotable. It's the champion he's happy about, where he wasn't happy about Aljamain Sterling being the champion, let's be real. Just like he wasn't happy with Tyron Woodley being the champion, let's be real. And that's two guys also that have been vocal during their title reign. He didn't like that Tyron Woodley, you know, would say, yo, I can't fight back-to-back. Or I took an injury during this training camp. I can't fight. Or I feel like a lot of the things that would be pointed out were things that were true. You know what I mean? You would see Woodley point out things, and then they would, you know, butt heads about that. So you have guys that don't really just want to bend the knee to Dana White, and they're I would say a lot of it too, even with the guy being, you know, a company man, a guy that is selling the fight, a guy that's respectful to the UFC. Aljamain Sterling, I feel like, was very. You would have thought they would have had a good relationship. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like, for the most part, I feel like, you know, the debate was always with the fans. I didn't really see where, I don't know if it was like when Aljamain wasn't, when he had chunks of inactivity in his time. I'm not going to front about that. Like, he definitely, there was a decent amount of space between a couple of his fights. But, I mean, if you look at the majority, is really what he just did. And, you know, fighting TJ, Henry Cejudo, and Sean O'Malley in 10 months' time, I think should be recognized. And you don't even hear anyone mentioning that. Like, I haven't seen anyone bring that up besides me. Like, yeah, I'm going to float my own boat. I'm going to go ahead and just point that out. I'm the only one that's even pointed that out. The fact that he just fought three times in 10 months, I haven't seen one person tweet that on Twitter, and I'm always in MMA Twitter. I'm always reading everybody's posts and jumping into it lately, especially. You know what I mean? Especially with the betting. I'm reading all the conversations, all the debate. I haven't seen anyone mention that. Three title defenses in 10 months. Isn't that interesting? You know what I mean? So I know I took it away a little bit. I want to get back to what you were saying. Go ahead. But, yeah, I just think he finally got a champion. You know, he got Sean O'Malley there, and now he just wants to protect him. So basically do that by taking the two strongest candidates to take the belt right off him in this next fight is Aljamain Sterling and Merab. So he's trying to, you know, say that the friendship, you know, he doesn't want to allow it. Like you said, if it was McGregor and Aldo Mobov, you know, he would be just fine without having them fight if that was what it was. So I like that you made that example.
But, you know, man, my thing is this. It ain't like Sean O'Malley called out a bum to defend the belt against for his first title defense. He called out the one guy to beat him. It ain't like when Michael Bisping called out Dan Henderson, who wasn't even ranked, you know, who was on, I want to say, was on like a little loser streak. But guess what they did? They gave Michael Bisping Dan Henderson for his first title defense, bro. It's like, come on, UFC. I ain't even gonna say UFC. Come on, Dana White. You gotta start putting your personal feelings to the side, bro. Not all fighters are gonna be buddy-buddy with you, man. It's people that go to work every day. And you know what? I'm raising my hand right now. I see some bodies I know I can't stand. But you know what? Good morning. Have a good day. Keep it moving. They probably don't like me, and they know I don't like them, but I'm still going to speak. I'm still going to keep it cordial. I'm still going to keep it professional. Why can't Dana White do this, man? All these guys are not going to like you, bro. All these guys don't want to have a personal relationship with you, man. That's why, what they call it, Dana White privilege, that shouldn't even be a thing, bro. That shouldn't even be a thing, but it is. But, you know, man, I had to get that off my chest, man. I was listening to Jimmy Smith today, and they was talking about the Merab, Aljo, Sean O'Malley thing, and they was like, Merab need to become a professional. You might have to fight your friend in his business, la, 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 la. And then the one lady said, guarantee the UFC wouldn't have made Conor McGregor fight Otto Lobov. And I was like, damn, that was a great pull by her. Because Jimmy was going off. He was going off on Morale. And then when that lady said that, it was a caller that actually said it, I think. And he just shut up. He was like, you make a good point. You make a good point with that one. Come on, man. But look, man, let's jump into it, man. I had to get it off my chest. Normally, I don't like to go on rants. But that was bothering me today. Keys, Blessed Express, right hook to the jaw of Korean Zombie, flatlined him. I didn't think Korean Zombie would win that fight anyway. I thought he would always get knocked out because his fighting style lends to him getting knocked out. I think he should retire, to be honest. He's taking a lot of damage in his career. But, Keith, what was your assessment of the fight, man?
So, yeah, actually, I'm glad you brought this up because I literally had the Blessed Express up on our header for that Holloway fight week, man. I was in a great mood. I was like, damn. The only thing that wasn't cool is that I, you know, based on the time difference, I couldn't really watch it. You know, I was dead. I was asleep. You know, I had to sleep for work, and that thing, the prelims were on at 5. The main card was at 8 a.m. I was like, I was in work. You know, I was working at 9 a.m. that day. I was like, all right, like, you know, that's a little bit. You know, I didn't watch it. But I saw the clip back. I mean, thought most likely that Max Holloway would win by decision. That's what I thought. And interestingly enough, the Holloway by decision, I want to say, was plus 100 odds, and Holloway by KO or TKO was minus 120. So that was how that was. But I thought it would have been the decision. I mean, that the knockout was, I mean, it wasn't super surprising either. I mean, like you said, Zombie has that kind of style. He wants to come forward and just trade shots, and you know, he has a pretty good chin, but it's like Holloway throws such high volume that, you know, he's going to – you can't just play that game because, like, Holloway's just going to batter you, you know what I mean? And especially when you rush in on him, and that's what it seemed like Zombie did. He kind of, like – I don't know if Max was hurt or what the case was, but it looked like Zombie kind of came rushing forward and Holloway just slapped him, bro. I don't know, but I did see that. I mean, it definitely kind of, obviously I'm happy for Max Holloway. I love every time he wins, like whoever he fights, I always like, you know, I'm always in front of the TV. This time I wasn't because it was really a tough, you know, time of day for me to do it. I would have had to get up like super early and watch it before work, which just I was honestly not trying to do, but I'm always in front of the TV for Max Holloway fights. So obviously I'm happy, but I do feel, you know, pretty sad for the Korean Zombie, though. Like, I feel bad. He did say he's retiring. I saw him take the gloves off in the video, and I saw his post. You know, he is retiring or already retired, which I think was a good move. I don't know if we did predictions for that card on the show or not. I don't remember, but I did say that, you know, I felt like, you know, win or lose, he would retire with this fight. And it was more likely than not that he would lose, you know, him being kind of on the downside of his career. Max Holloway, still, you know, only 31 years of age and, you know, has landed so many punches, has taken so many punches in the UFC, by the way, is, you know, far in the lead for most significant strikes landed in UFC history, by the way, Max Holloway. He has over 3,000 significant strikes at this point, and the number two behind him, I'm pretty sure, is Joanna, who is retired. And I want to say the number three is Frankie Edgar, who is also retired. And either way, neither one of them have really even close to the number of significant strikes Max had. He has, like, I want to say Joanna's number two strikes landed ever, but she's in, like, by a wide margin. Like, I want to say the number two, whichever one of them, or if I miss somebody, is like, you know, 1,500-ish, somewhere in there. So max is a good 1,500 or so strikes above the next closest person to him that never gets strikes. But dude is a total legend. Korean Zombie, like I said, I feel bad for the way that he had to go out on that type of loss. I mean, some people are saying it's picture perfect type of loss, but I don't know, bro. I didn't really want to see that, him go out like to get, you know, basically face plant. That's not really what I wanted to see. I felt like this match wasn't really the right match for him to, but at the same time, I get it as far as like wanting the biggest name in the division. You know, he fought Volkanovski, so, or second biggest name in the division, however you want to put it. But I mean, he fought Volkanovski already, so this is like the biggest fight, you know, I can take to go out on. So I get it on that front. I do feel bad, but he's retired. I think that's a good move.
Yeah, man. There wasn't too much in this fight that surprised me. You know, I was surprised the way that Korean Zombie came out in the third round and was like, you know, just coming forward, swinging wildly. It was like, I want to say that was a five-round fight. This was the main event. What was the rush again? Knocked out. Yeah, the third round, the fourth round, the fifth round. I mean, that was kind of weird to me. But I got one concern, though, Keys. Max get hit a lot, man. I was watching the fight. I was like, damn, he getting touched up a little bit. Uh-huh. He has to work on his defense, bro. It's okay for him to have that output. But when you starting to, you know, as you start to creep up there in age, you need to work on your defense. You know, work on your defense. You know, work on your head movement. One thing that me and you both like about Turner Ferguson, even though he has been losing a lot, he started working on his head movement. You know, his head movement has been good, but he just have lapses in judgment that leads to him getting either kicked in the face or choked out. So, but he has been working on his head movement and the show and his fights. And I need to see that from Max moving forward, man. I think he gets hits a lot, although he is doing a lot of hitting. But, you know, especially if he's going to move up in weight too. Because, you know, there's some heavy hitters up there at 155. You know, you got Oliveira, you got Gaethje, you got Poirier. Man, you got some bangers up there. So I really think he needs to work on his defense. But, Keys, this is the million-dollar question. Max is 0-3 against Volkanovski. Max has basically beat everybody in the top 10. Do you want to see Max fight Volkanovski again?
I mean, doing the fourth show, I don't know, bro. I mean, that, not really.
And he hasn't,
not really.
And he hasn't won one.
Who hasn't won one?
Max. He's 0-3.
Yeah, he hasn't won one. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Exactly, yeah. So Volkanovski is up 3-0. Yeah, so I don't really want to see it. I thought you were saying that, like, I was confused. I was like, is he saying, like, they haven't won the fight since they fought each other? Because, I mean, technically, no, that wouldn't be true. Because, yeah, he fought. I misunderstood it for a second, but, no, I get it. Yeah, Volkanovski's up 3-0. I mean, I don't really want to see it. I mean, that's, maybe it, like, if it was, like, 155 or something, they could, like, start the count. Countdown over, you know what I mean? If we start from one, like 155 maybe, but that'd probably be like the only way I'd probably want to see it. But even then, I wouldn't really want to see it that much because they fought three times, bro.
Yeah, and then, man, when you look at it, I think it's going to happen because Ilya Topuria is the only thing that's standing between Max and Volkanovski, really. Because everybody in the top 10 basically backs his beat. Only person he hasn't fought is Topuria and, Giga Chikadze. Let me see. He beat Yair. He beat Brian Ortega. I want to say he beat Arnold Allen. I don't think he fought Josh Emmett.
Yeah, Max beat up Arnold Allen, bro. That was earlier this year. This year he fought Arnold Allen.
Okay.
Yeah. Max hasn't fought Josh Emmett, bro. But you know what's up with those fights, bro. Max fights those guys, bro. You know Max. Holloway had put a beating on Josh Emmett, bro. You know that. I think Max had put a bad beating on I don't think he's fought Giga Chikadze, but I think he put a bad beating on him, too. I mean, we saw what Calvin Cater did to – man, look at this. You just hit me with a good point, Ray. You didn't even realize it. Look what – you know, people say MMA math doesn't work, but let's just say, just for a laugh, let's just look at this. You see what our boy Calvin Cater did to Giga Chikadze, right?
Yeah.
And y'all saw what Max did to Calvin Cater, bro. Yo, Calvin was beating Giga Chikadze Cater was beating up Giga Chikadze, bro, like his life depended on it, bro. He was beating him so bad. It was like, yo, you got to fight for he was fighting for all the belts, bro. They were like, yo, you got to fight for the $1 million prize, bro. Like, one of y'all got to win dominantly or you know, the bag is on the line. He was fighting like he wasn't going to get his purse. You know what I mean? Like, Cater beat him so bad, it was like they told Cater that, yo, if you lose, you're going to make $0, bro. We're not even going to pay you. You're not even going to get your show money. He was like, okay. He's like, there's no way. I'm not even getting hit. I mean,
because basically it's only, I mean, Topuria, Max hasn't fought him. He hasn't fought Giga. And he hasn't fought Mozwar Evalev, something like that. But I don't even see Evalev being like even a potential fight for Max. I see Giga maybe, but bro, the UFC is in a tough spot with this one, Keys, because he done beat everybody, him and Volkanovski basically have beaten everybody in the top 10. So I think a fourth fight is going to happen, man. But I think the UFC is going to try to backdoor negotiate with Max Holloway to move up in weight, bro. Because I know they don't want to make a fourth fight with him being 0-3 against Volkanovski. Although the second and third fights have been close. The second and third fights were close. Especially the second fight. The second fight could have went either way. So, I don't know, man. As much as I want to see it, I don't want to see it. Because I fell out of love with Moreno and Figueiredo because they fought each other four times. And it was just like, man, y'all really holding up the division. But would a Max Holloway and Volkanovski fight really hold up this division? No. It really wouldn't hold it up because they done beat all these guys. But, you know, man, that Max is definitely putting the UFC in a tough spot. And I don't blame him, but I think he's probably going to – they're going to backdoor negotiate with him to move up, Keith. But Volkanovski moving up too, though.
Yeah. So, okay. So this is what I was trying to say, though. I was talking about this back. We talked about this like back when we already made this point, both of us, like almost a year ago. Like when I think it was like right after they fought for the third time. So that was last summer, right? Max Holloway, Volkanovski 3 was summer 2022. So we had just seen it, and then, like, that day or the next day, they announced – no, it was, like, that day they basically announced it because Khabib and Islam and then Volkanovski, they did a face-off in the octagon. So they pretty much, like, verbally agreed right there. So the fight was, like, halfway made. They just I bet you that fight was booked, like, that weekend. Like, they probably already booked it. You know what I mean? That fight was probably already locked, and they just – because you remember, they fought, and then they announced that fight not long after. Like, it was pretty soon after that fight. We all knew that fight, it was going to be in, you know, I mean, Q1 or something, because that was, like, October when they fought Oliveira and Islam the first time. That was, like, October, and, you know, I mean, him and Max had just fought in, like, July. So he literally went back. And it's funny, because didn't Volkanovski – I thought Volkanovski was weighed in for that fight, too. He was actually – the official backup. Remember that?
Yep.
Wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
He was the backup, bro. Oh, my God. So we could end up having – and we talked about this back then. We said me and you both – we asked each other, like, okay, how does Volkanovski do a 155 versus these four guys? And we talked about him versus him and what a Volkanovski Oliveira would – what we thought that would look like. And we said we thought – I want to say we thought Oliveira would beat him, you know, at 155. So, but the whole thing I was saying is that we talked about this. Remember we said, my point was, when it was in the build-up to the Islam, around that time, when it was the build-up to, we knew that fight was happening. We knew Volkanovski was going to go to 155 to fight Islam. So we said at that time, we were like, yo, this is going to end up being a thing where they have to – we got to separate them because they're going to end up – they're just going to keep beating everybody, the two of them. They're just going to win all their fights until they end up fighting again, and they're just going to keep matching up at 145. There's no way. Like, what would happen next? Off the top of my head, if you wanted to have Volkanovski fight Topuria right now, he's going to smash Topuria, and he's going to take his O, and then Max Holloway, who do you want him to fight? Giga Chakazi next? He will – beat the brakes off Giga Chakazi. We will see a performance. You know what I mean? Holloway will batter his face. We will see a performance. And what will we say? Okay, they just beat the two guys that are right there. Now they got to fight again. So that would just be like the next scenario. But there's many. Like, then who would be like Bryce Mitchell after that, or, you know, this next Arnold Allen after that, or whoever's right there. You know what I mean? And then we're just going to keep repeating the cycle. It's like, okay, they're going to beat those two guys. You know, Bryce Mitchell's not going to land a takedown on Max Holloway. Holloway's going to beat him down. Like, it's just, we're going to see the same thing pan out again and again. They're going to keep getting matched up. So we said it. We were like, yo, they need to separate them. One needs to go up 155. It doesn't matter necessarily too much who it is, but, like, they got to be in different divisions because they're just going to keep beating everybody if they're in the same division. So they can't both go to 155. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? They both could go to 155, though, because there are big fights down there.
There is big fights. And realistically, I mean, if we're looking at it, we don't know for sure that they would both run the table to where they would end up fighting at 155. Like, I don't think that
exactly.
Now that I really dig into it a little more, I don't think that's definite. You know what I mean? 145, I think, yeah, they're going to keep beating all these guys. But when you start matching them against 155, like, Poirier has two wins over Max Holloway, and he beat him at 155, like, you know, a couple of years ago. And that was a great rematch, you know, and I thought, you know, I that's actually one that I, you know, probably wouldn't mind seeing again. That's one that I'm okay. We can watch Holloway and Dustin Poirier fight for a third time. I don't care that Max is down 0-2. That fight, you know, he got submitted the first time. Yeah, I think Poirier tapped him the first time, and then I think they had a great fight. The only thing that I pointed out when I watched it was I felt like Max's power wasn't really translating at 155. That's what it kind of looked like to me in the fight. It felt like when you would see either one of them land a good shot, like, you'd see, like, the reaction, you know what I mean? And I didn't perceive that Poirier was – I felt like Poirier was eating a lot of Max's power. Like, it wasn't – I didn't feel like he was getting hurt. Like, he was getting touched. Like, Holloway was landing. I feel like they both were landing on each other. But it's just – it seemed to me like I think Poirier's shots were affecting Max more than his power was affecting Poirier. I felt like Poirier was just, he could have done another, you know, couple rounds right there. You know, like he was okay. You know, you put him
but
in
we
there.
Always gotta remember, but we got to remember that Holloway took that fight on very, very, very short notice. I want him with some, I want to
say that
was like 10 days. Nah, when he took the Poirier fight, the second fight, then when he fought him at 155, he took that fight, and I want to say like 10 days notice.
Holloway with 10 days notice?
Yeah, I want to say it was like 10 days notice, bro.
Oh, who is Poirier supposed to fight? The Tony?
Poirier was supposed to fight somebody else, man, but they end up pulling off the fight. And Dana was looking for a replacement. And
yeah,
Holloway
I did not remember
said
that,
he,
bro.
Yeah, Holloway said he was.
Thank you for bringing this up, because I definitely.
Yeah, because Poirier, because at first there was a, everybody was thinking that Max might not be able to cut the weight, and then he ended up making the weight, but. Basically, he didn't even have a training camp coming into that second Poirier fight.
The thing is that basically, if they both go to 155, I guess what I'm saying is we don't know for sure that they would match up again, because I feel like the talent at 155, you got, you know, all these guys, it's just like, I think there'll be more competitive fights once you put them up there. I think Volkanovski, you know, you imagine, like, we're trying to imagine, you know, Volkanovski versus Justin Gaethje, or, you know, Volkanovski versus Islam 2 and Max Holloway versus Dustin Poirier 3, or Max Holloway versus Justin Gaethje, you know, for Justin's BMF title. I think it's fair play to say that Max Holloway, you know, these guys are saying they're the BMF. It's like, bro, Max Holloway has the most significant strikes ever in UFC history. What are you talking about? You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
None of those guys are in the top.
Hey,
none of those guys are in the top five for significant strikes landed, bro. Max is in there by himself. You know what I mean? He's in there with Frankie. You know, but I don't see any of those guys that lightweight in there, bro. They're not landing that many shots. That's true.
Nah, but there's some bangers at 155. You got Moicano, Jalen Turner, RDA. I ain't even gonna say that guy, man. You got Sarukin, Gamrot, Chandler, Darius, Poirier, Gaethje, Oliveira, and Islam. So you right, man. Even if they do move up to 155. There might be slim to no chance of them ever fighting for that belt at 155, because that's a murderer's row, bro. That is a murderer's row of talent at 155. But let's jump into this though, man. We'll touch on this real quick. Your girl Erin Blanchfield, man, she the real deal, Keys. Bro. She the real deal.
Come on, bro. You know, we said it a couple fights ago. We were like, nah, Erin Blanchfield's about to beat everybody. You know, we watched her a couple fights ago. We started talking about it. We were like, yo, she's really about to just roll everybody. And she's really good. She's really good, bro. You know who else is really good?
I'm listening.
Zhang Weili, bro. How good is Zhang Weili, bro?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Zhang Weili just beat it. We got to just run that back real quick, because it happened not this past, but both of them look – it. Erin Brent, yeah, I agree, bro. I totally agree. They both – is that the same division? Oh, they're in different divisions? What?
Hold on.
And Rose is about to fight weekend.
No. Erin Blanchfield, she's in Shevchenko's. She's at 125. Wally is at 115.
Oh, so Rose is, then Rose is about to fight at flyweight on Saturday too, you know that?
Yeah, she's fighting at 125.
Yeah, she's moving up to Valentina's division. You know, I think what's crazy about what happened?
Yeah, I was like, go ahead.
I mean, a lot of people, I see people making a good point saying, like, it's funny how Rose is moving up and she has two wins over the strawweight champion. You know, I'm talking about Zhang Weili. It's like Rose beat her twice. You know, she Rose knocked her out and pretty much dominated her with the wrestling. You know, like that second fight. Like the striking was close. I think it could have been anybody's fight win in the striking in the rematch. And then I feel like Rose made the difference with her wrestling. And, but, you know, I saw her, a quote from her media day, and Rose said that, like, she just basically needs a new challenge, and she's like, I'm going to get bored, like, you know, I could stay in that division, but, you know, I want to feel like I'm challenging myself, you know, so I don't get bored, you know, I want to kind of go that way, and I respected that, man. I didn't know that was coming. I was like, all right, like, that's fair game. Like, it's not one of those, like, you know, you see somebody lose and they just immediately think that changing weights is the problem and they'll do better. It's like, you know, Luke Rockhold went up to 205, didn't work out. Jacare went up to 205, you know, that didn't work out. You know, a lot of these guys move weight, but it's not for Rose. It just sounds like she just wants to get something to motivate her again, you know, and I kind of like that, you know. She sounds like she's hungry for something, knowing she has wins over the champion at 115.
Yeah, man. But, boy, the UFC didn't do her no favors with this opponent, though. Whoo! They didn't do her any favors with this opponent that she's fighting. Man, and Phil Rock, oh, my goodness gracious. Hey, Rose, if you're listening, in this fight, you're going to have to go to the phone booth and put on your Thug Rose outfit, because you're not going to be able to fight the way you fought against Carla Esparza against Manny Fiora. It just ain't going to happen. And if you do that, it'll be an easy night. It's going to be an easy night for Manny and a bad night for you. So I want her to get back to being the Rose that was the champion the first time around, when, you know, after she beat Joanna. I want her to be that Rose again, because that Rose was exciting to watch, very well-rounded, very skillful. The Rose I saw against Carla Esparza, I don't even recognize who that lady was. But, man, this is going to be a good fight, though, man. It got the makings of being a good fight.
Yeah, bro, I definitely agree. It's interesting because you pretty much give her, like, you know, debatably the best in that division. Like, Fiora, you know, she's arguably the best in that division. So, you know, you see certain fights and it's kind of like, you know, you see certain other fights and it kind of looks like an alley-oop for a guy, you know, like to get into a division. They're like, all right, that's a winnable fight. You know, like when, you know, when Michael, I think, who is it? When Justin Gaethje came in, they gave him Michael Johnson. It was like, okay, Michael Johnson's good, but like, that's a winnable fight for Justin Gaethje. Like, that's not a bad, that's kind of an alley-oop, like having his type of style. And Michael Johnson was kind of, you know, he definitely had some mileage on him at that point. I feel like that was where he, you know, he started to be, like, he was kind of up and down at that time. That was a winnable fight. But I feel like this right here, I mean, it's also not a UFC debut for Rose, but so different scenario. But at the same time, like, for someone to move a division, you're really not giving them, you know, that favorable of a fight. It's very similar to how, like, Rockhold, when he moved up to 205, they gave him Jan Błachowicz in his debut fight, bro. And he got slapped bad. Oh, my God. Like, what? Like, this is kind of like that in a way. It's like you're not trying to help him. You're not doing, like you said, you're not doing him any favors, bro. You're giving him Jan Błachowicz, this slept him, bro. KO'd stiff. Like, that, wow, bro. He ran over Luke Rockhold that suit. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. With COVID, that's a devastating. Same for Adesanya. They had to move up and fight. I mean, I remember thinking Adesanya could win that fight. I still think Adesanya could probably beat Jan Błachowicz, but he just needs to come in heavier. Like, I feel like I don't know what he was talking about. I thought he said he came in like under 205. I'm pretty sure he said he was like 190 pounds for that fight or something, or like 195. And it's like, you probably don't want to be underweight against Jan Błachowicz, who's going to gain back. Like, Jan Błachowicz is probably, you know, I would bet he's like 220, 230 in the cage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Jan Błachowicz is not weight. He's a big lightweight. He's not, you know, he's only just making 205. There's no way that guy, you know what I mean? He's definitely a good, you know, 220, 230 in the cage. So to come in light against him is a big mistake, especially where he has the wrestling, you know. He can take you down, and you're going to have – it's just crazy, though. I know what you're saying. Spiro, that's – I don't know, man. That's a toss-up fight for me. That's really a toss-up.
Yeah, man. And then we got the main event Saturday. Cyril Gane versus C.J. Spivak. I want to say Spivak is the king of the first round knockout. Man, this is a good fight, man. Happening in France, Cyril Gane's home country. But I think this is I think this might be another tough matchup for Cyril Gane, man. One thing about Cyril Gane, though, he has to go back to being an athlete. That's one of the things that got him by as a heavyweight was his athleticism, the way he moved. It seemed like he done got away from that a little bit. He needs to go back to that, especially against this guy. This guy is no joke. Man, whoo! This is another early starting pay-per-view. This one starts at 3 o'clock. So, yeah. So what do you think about Cyril Gane and Spivak?
I would say I think if Sergey can take him down, like, it's going to be a problem. I don't even like Gane getting taken down in this fight. Like, if he gets taken down, it's over. Like, Spivak is very good, bro. He's very good. You see him take guys down, and he's solid on the ground, bro. If he takes Gane down, it's gonna get dark for him quick, man. He cannot get taken down, bro. Like, Gane needs to have a very good first round. Like, he needs to come out dominant, you know, because if he even leaves himself open and gets taken down, I think it's over. No. Or either that or Spivak's just going to – it's going to just be one of those fights, you know. Spivak's going to have, you know, over 100 ground strikes, and it's going to be a tough night at the office, bro. But I think if Gane can make it his fight and get back to the movement, like you were saying, like, he looks like a middleweight in there. Like, when I see him with that bouncy footwork and, you know, the whole thing, like, it's like that guy moves like a middleweight, you know. It's kind of crazy to watch. So if he could get back to that and make it his fight against Sergey Spivak, like, I think, you know, Gane can put on a show, you know. I think he puts on a show. But if he can't and, you know, he's not ready, his takedown defense not about to be that 100% that they were talking about, then it's going to be a rough night for him.
Yeah, man. But I think I'm going with Spivak, man. I'm going with Spivak to win this fight, dog. I think he finally gets out of the first round. I think I think this fight might go to a decision. But I'm going to take Spivak in this fight. And I'm also going with Thug Rose, man. I think Thug Rose reappears, man. I'm not confident in this pick. But I'm such a big Rose fan, bro. So I'm going to go with Rose and I'm going with Spivak, man. Those two I'm going with this weekend.
Yeah, man. I think I'm going with you, bro. I think Rose can do it. I think realistically, like, she could probably beat anybody. Like, she could probably beat any one of these women out there. But it just depends. I feel like it depends where her mind is at for me. Like,
yeah,
I think if she's really motivated, which she does sound motivated, but, you know, she's always kind of, she's a bit timid too, you know, in the build up to her fight. So, and you see, I want to say I've seen a quote from Manon Fiorot that, you know, she seems pretty confident in herself, and I don't know, you know, I just saw, you know, our boy Aljo go in there way overconfident with Sean O'Malley. Like, when he was talking at the press conference, that's one thing I want to say I'm disappointed in Aljo about, you know, in the whole thing, is not even the lot. Like, I feel disappointed in his mindset, like, selling the fight. Like, I think he might have, I think he went too far trying to sell the fight and even, like, really, like, I think he psyched himself out, because when you get like that, like, I feel like he was dismissive of O'Malley, you know? Like, I feel like he was overconfident to where, like, he wasn't even considering it, you know what I mean? He wasn't even, I think he really felt like, and you could be that much better, but you could still lose, you know? Like, the better fighter doesn't always win, you know what I mean? So you can be, you know, on paper, like, one can be much better than the other, but they can still lose, you know, especially when you get dismissive of guys, you know, and I feel like Aldo got dismissive of O'Malley in the build-up to that fight, you know. I think he really just got in his own head about being that much better, and it's like, you can get caught, you know, at any moment. You can get choked, and it could be over, you know. Like, if you're going to be looking past, you know, I think looking past guys and just dismissing, you know, just getting dismissive of the fact that they're dangerous too. Like, I feel like Aldo said he was dangerous, but I feel like he appeared to me at the press conference that he got, like, really full of himself. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, remember the way Woodley was talking to Usman at the press conference before their fight? Like,
yeah.
Woodley, it reminded me of that. Like, it really reminded me a lot of that. Like, Aldo, the way he was with O'Malley at that press conference was just like the way Woodley spoke to Usman when Usman was fighting for the belt. And then we saw what happened. Usman rolled Tyron Woodley, bro. That one hurt my feelings. I remember leaving Hooters with my head down, bro. That really, like, that had me fucked up, bro. I was hella disappointed. I was like, damn, you know. He dominated Woodley, bro. That really had me in my feelings, bro. I was really like, damn, bro. That ruined my night, bro. Woodley got beat down by Usman. But that was just another case of, you know, guy just gets, like, dismissive of, because you saw Woodley at that press conference, Woodley was like, how are you going to do it? Like, how are you going to get it done? Like, your wrestling's not, he's like, if we wrestle, you know, he's like, my wrestling is better. If we strike, I'll knock you out. Like, Woodley was literally talking so crazy to Usman at that press conference, and it sounded like, Woodley was like, I beat you everywhere. He's like, everywhere the fight goes, I'm better than you. I beat you everywhere. That was pretty much what Woodley was talking to Usman at that press conference. And then we saw the complete opposite in the cage. We pretty much saw Usman dominate Woodley. He just dominated him, you know, bad. And it was just like, that's like a similar case where it's like guys get dismissive. And then, like, you know, I think it gets to their mind where you forget that, like, everybody's dangerous, you know. And even if you're better, it's like the better fighter doesn't always win. Like, it can really change at any point, you know. I want to say back then a lot of us had Tony beating Justin Gaethje back then. And I don't remember – I'm not saying that build-up was the same, but it's just like anything can happen, you know. So, like, back then, I was so confident Tony would beat Gaethje back then. And then the way Gaethje beat Tony and then pretty much, like, threw his, you know, just derailed his whole career since then. I feel like that fight broke Tony in a way, you know? I feel like that fight might have broke a, you know, piece of Tony and his confidence, you know? And that's actually someone that I don't really like, the fact that he's still fighting after losing the way he looked versus Bobby Green, to be honest. But that's another topic for another day. But, yeah, anyone could lose any day. So I think the way Rose is going into this fight, kind of timid, but seeming, you know, looking motivated, I think we could see an upset with Rose, man. I think so.
Yeah, man. You know, like you said, it's all about her mindset, bro. It's all about her mindset. Hey, they announced another fight, man, and I think you would love this fight. Bryce Arnold, I think his name is. Let me make sure. Pulling it up now. But it's two guys that me and you really like. Pulling it up. Let me see. Where is it? Come on. Come on. Come on. Let's go. There it is. We got our guy, Paul Craig, taking on Brendan Allen at 185 pounds. I like this fight, Keys. Two up-and-comers getting it on. I want to say this is going to be the main event of the UFC Fight Night, November 18th, bro. I think this got a chance to be a banger fight, Keys.
Oh, I think so. I mean, look how good Paul Craig has looked since he just had his first fight at middleweight. Dude, it looks savage at 185. Like, you think that's his weight class?
I think it is, man. I think he was dropping too much weight, bro, trying to make 170, I think. I think he was trying to make 170, or was he fighting at 205? No, he fought Jamal Hill. So he was at 205, yeah. So I think 185 is definitely probably his weight class. But, man, this is going to be a fight. Who I like this fight, Keys?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he broke Jamal Hill's arm. Like,
yep,
he dislocated something. Shout out to Jamal Hill, by the way. I'm looking forward to seeing Jamal Hill versus Jerry whenever they can get that one done. I'm hearing they're doing Jerry versus Alex Fajeda, but I know we'll get Jamal Hill. We'll get that one. I think we'll get that one. Yeah, I love that fight, though. Paul Craig looks very good at 185. And that sounds like, you know, number one contender fight to me. I'm pretty sure Brendan Allen's on a big win streak.
Yeah, man, this fight is going to be a good one, bro. I like this fight. And this is what fight night should be all about. Two up-and-coming young dudes fighting under the bright lights. You know, this is what fight night is supposed to be about, fights like this, dog. We covered a lot tonight, man. We talked about the Blessed Express. We talked about Dana White and his issues with Aljamain. We talked about Thug Rose versus Fierro. We talked about our girl Erin Blanchfield. We talked about Sergey versus Spivak. So we covered a lot tonight, bro. Any last words?
Nah, man. This time, have many last words. I will say, rest in peace to Bray Wyatt, bro. I saw that news,
yeah.
And I was like, damn. Like, that guy. And I know you probably want to say something on that. You're more of the wrestling guy than me. But I'm very aware of he was a really interesting guy. I mean, I haven't been tapped into wrestling as much in the past couple of years, but I'm aware of who he was. And it's crazy. Like, him and The Undertaker had that moment, you know, in the ring. And then it's like that's his last time in the ring. You know, people were saying that was like the passing of the torch between Undertaker and Bray Wyatt. You know, it's terrible, bro. I heard he's only 36, so yeah, that's bad news. I don't like that, bro.
Yeah, the crazy part is he was 36, and then the day before Terry Funk died, and I want to say he was in his late 70s, and he was a pro wrestler too, man. I was not to be a Debbie Downer or nothing, but it was this article, man, that came. That was on ESPN, man, and it says that study shows that CTE and 40% of athletes who die before the age of 30, that CTE was identified. But Bray Wyatt died from complications of COVID because he had a heart condition, and then he got COVID, and he couldn't seem to come around, and he just kept he just couldn't get it back, man. But you know, rest in peace to him, to his family. Rest in peace to Terry Funk. Everybody have a great weekend. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. And like always, Lee and Keith signing out. We're always in the show with a peace.